Kozdub, and more. That's Saturday, May 18th at 6:30 p.m. For more information, call 718-270-4902. That's 718-270-4902.
Malcolm beats in us like the heart he gave us. He makes us stand up straight like the courage he left us. In that last gesture of will.
Rayla Forrest, member of the WBAI Bylaws Revision Committee and Local Advisory Board. Join us this Monday morning between 10 a.m. and noon as we continue our community listener forums on the struggle to create a new beginning for the Pacifica Network and WBAI. This week, we will be talking about the history of Pacifica and the role, prerogatives, and responsibilities of the Local Advisory Board. Invited guests include Pacifica historian Ralph Emmerman, lab member Anthony McCall, and member of the Concerned Friends of WBAI Election Committee, Caroline Burden, listener members, and you. That's Monday, May 6th, from 10 a.m. to noon, over listener-sponsored WBAI, Pacifica Radio in New York.
You're tuned to WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial. I'm Just Scott Keys, and this is the third of a series of community listener forums. And we again welcome you to these airs, and we'll be here until 12 noon. And we have some guests in the studio and some expected guests along the way coming along. Ralph Engelman. okay, who was the author of the 1996 publication Public Radio and Television in America, Political History. He's a former chair of the local advisory board and also a member of the National Board of Pacifica. We also have Bob Goldberg in the house, who's from Long Island Friends. We expect Carolyn Burden, from the a former member of the Elections Committee of Concerned Friends, and Anthony McCall from the local board and a member of CPR. And, of course, Ray LaFarris and our other co-host, Janice K. Bryan, is not available today, being it's a work day. Anyway, I just want to welcome everyone here, and including Ralph, and I want to say good morning to you and Bob. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good to be here.
All right. Ralph, I guess we'll start off with you. You wrote a book, Public Radio and Television in America, Political History, and you focused on Pacifica. And just synopsize the book, and also talk about the development of the local advisory board and national board as it pertains to our history here at Pacifica.
Okay, I think many of our listeners are familiar with the basic mission and the fundamentals of the history of Pacifica that Lewis Hill and a group of other radical anarchists and radical pacifists founded Pacifica shortly after the Second World War. They saw a connection between the need for social change and a free flow of information and independent sources of information. You know, they were concerned with, as many people know, promoting understanding among peoples of different backgrounds, providing a news report and information from sources not used by mainstream media. But what I want to emphasize today, since we're really focusing on the role of the local advisory boards and the sort of Pacifica-wide project of...
rewriting the bylaws.
Right. Let me just make a couple of points. Lewis Hill, as an anarchist, was very committed to the notion of a non-hierarchical forms of organization within Pacifica, within KPFA, the first station. He believed in sort of collective leadership. And actually, you know, John Downing, who wrote a sort of a classic book on radical media, said that initially the most revolutionary thing about Pacifica, as Lewis Hill conceived it, was not what went out over the air, but the fact that he wanted to create a structure that did not replicate mainstream media, where you had sort of a collective governance. And originally, there was a kind of executive membership made up of the staff that was the heart and soul of the administration of Pacifica. They elected a committee of directors of about five people with a chair that constituted the board. So, again, keep in mind that he was interested not simply in a in different kind of radio in terms of what was being broadcast, but also in terms of its internal organization. Now, at the same time, things changed. Pacifica became, first of all, KPFA grew, and Hill came to believe that the structure as originally set up was not totally workable, and he wanted to modify it. And for a period in the early mid-50s, there was a lot of struggle within Pacifica in terms of what the best structure would be.
Now, that initial structure, what was that initial structure like?
Well, as I said, that essentially the staff would meet to make decisions and delegated the ultimate authority to a committee of five, which it elected. So it was very much a collective, a cooperative. Hill, as an anarchist, you know, very much believed in that. But at some point he felt that there should be somewhat more central power there. But more fundamental to that was the growth of Pacifica, the fact that in 1959 KPFK in Los Angeles went on the air, and then that same year WBAI was given to Pacifica, and the next year, 1960, went on the air as a Pacifica station. And the old system of governance wouldn't work because, you know, it was focused. You had a group of people in Berkeley. And that's when a decision was made to, you know, develop local advisory boards, which would, you know, play an important role in the life of each of the Signal areas. And that grew.
Now, how did that form? What was the mechanism to form these LABs, or local advisory boards?
Well, I think originally the Pacifica, the executive committee or committee of directors went out and solicited board members, and then these local boards did become self-perpetuating boards. I should emphasize something that I think we'll need to discuss today. Lewis Hill did not believe in listener control. Which is not to say that doesn't end the conversation. It doesn't mean we shouldn't have listener control or greater level of listener control. And this, of course, relates to the whole question of election of local board members. But Hill was concerned that he felt that listeners should play a very important role as listener sponsors, as volunteers, that in ways direct and indirect, that they would help shape the direction of Pacifica. But he was concerned that a process of election and listener control could lead to sort of battles in the community to control Pacifica. Really, it was only a little bit later with the development of the community radio movement and Lorenzo Milam being one of the key leaders of that, and he himself a former KPFA volunteer, that there was a greater emphasis on community control, listener control of community radio stations. Now, granted, most of those stations, or virtually all of those stations, were, you know, not a group of stations with, you know, going across the country.
Now let me get this straight now. You're saying that Lou Hill did not envision that listeners having control. But what would be the role of the listener?
Well, first of all, the fundamental aspect of his plan was listener sponsorship. That is that by having a large number of listeners supporting the station, listeners who understood its importance, that would be the financial underpinnings and the underpinnings of the independence of the stations. And he also felt that, of course, that the role of the volunteers were very important. And involvement, he felt very strongly that the cultural life of communities should be reflected in what went over the air in Pacifica. So there was certainly tremendous importance. Obviously, the relationship with listeners, the local community, was very important. But it was not one that he thought should be exercised directly. If anything, I would say he was more concerned about, at least initially, a staff control of Pacifica in a non-hierarchical way. And I think that one of the things that we need to talk about is how to balance degrees and elements of listener control or input and the sort of independence of the staff also. I think that Pacifica is a very complex organization. Change within Pacifica is very complex, and it, you know, there are various relationships, national board, local board, staff, administration, so forth and so on. And I would argue that there isn't a quick fix here, but we have to look at ways, you know, to balance all of this out. I think it's a terribly important conversation because, given what we've just been through, I mean, often the discussion of governance and structure and bylaws is not very sexy, but it seems to me to prevent what happened and to ensure that we're on the right track, this is a very important discussion. And I certainly have no, you know, plan, and I think it's something that needs to be developed, collectively. But and I don't think we have to be totally, let's say, our hands have to be tied with what Lewis Hill thought, but I think we need to be clear about the, you know, the history of Pacifica. Other people have come, and I want them to get a chance to speak as well. But one of the things I hope, Dred, that we'll be able to come back to is talking a little bit about the heyday of the local advisory board, say in the 70s when I was on the local board and the national board, and the considerable authority that those local boards have had, and I think that they do represent a model that we can perhaps consider coming back to.
You're tuned to WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial, and this is the third of a community listener forums surrounding changes in Pacifica. I want to welcome Carolyn Burden in the house. And wait, let me get your mic on. Okay, now you can say good morning.
Good morning, Matt.
Good morning. And, of course, Anthony McCall, who's a member of the local board and a member of CPR. And I want to say good morning to you, sir.
Peace, Dred. Peace, everyone.
All right. Ralph, before we move on, let us do, and this first part of the conversation will center around the development of the local advisory board from early on. Now, what was the character of those first local boards, and how has it changed over the years, up to the point, I would say, probably until the point where your book was written?
Yeah. All right, well, I think there are two things I want to talk about. As you said, I call the heyday of the local advisory boards, and then talk about the way that authority was diminished and how that was really one of the key factors in the crisis that we faced. When I was on the BAI board and the national board in the 70s, these responsibilities were considerable. For example, the local advisory board meeting would always begin with a financial report in which the station manager would have a written report and we would go over that. The local advisory board had the responsibility when the general manager together with the staff would develop a budget that it would be approved by the local board, and then it was sent to the national board where it was formally approved. And then the local board would have the responsibility of monitoring the implementation of that budget.
Now, what was the relationship between the local boards at that time and the national board?
All right, a key question. Basically, what happened is that from each signal area in that period, you would have national board members nominated. They were really almost like de facto elections, but the national board would be constituted by members of the local advisory boards who were sent to the national board, nominated, and that was invariably ratified by the national board. And that was important because it meant that the national board members were rooted, had a sort of a history in their local signal area, had worked at the station, had contributed to the life of the station, had gotten to know the station. Meanwhile, the management and the staff had gotten to know those local board members as well before they went to the national board. So you had a kind of a federal system, and while obviously the national board members, we were licensees, we were concerned with the Pacifica as a whole, we also represented the local station. And one of the things that happened in the 90s, and especially the latter part of the 90s, is that Pat Scott and other elements in Pacifica decided to diminish the power of the local boards. It felt that for change to take place within Pacifica, and this is pre-John Murdoch and pre-hijackers, that you needed more top-down authority and that the local board should be weakened. It was a big mistake, and I think it set the stage and in many respects made possible the horrendous crisis that we faced. And I think that one of the things we need to do is, you know, restore the relationship between the national board members and the local board. Now, without getting maybe too much into the details, what I think some listeners, at least who were engaged in the struggle, know that in the sort of campaign to diminish the power of the local boards, the Pat Scott and other Pacifica officials basically in 1998.
Now, didn't that happen? I would even go so far as to say with David Selznick, when there was this call to broaden the listenership without broadening the listenership and gaining a wider audience. And I don't know if that was the same thing that Pat Scott, she brought in something else, but I would argue that it began with Selznick.
Right. Well, let me just finish though with this point, which is that they basically wrote the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, which funds public broadcasting in this country, essentially inviting them to say that the local boards had too much authority and were violating the Communications Act and CPB guidelines by having national board members sitting on the local board. I think that this was something that was a kind of a phony maneuver, and I think that there are plenty of ways in which to reestablish these kind of what I call this federal system within Pacifica, in which national board members, if they can certainly cease being members of technically of the local boards, but continue to sit on them. But I think that national board members, you know, should really come out of the local boards, and I think that that system of at large members who are, you know, not within a listening range of Pacifica stations was also a way of bypassing those. So that was another important feature of the local boards, is that there was a sort of organic relation between the local and the national board. And the final thing is that the local board played a very important role in establishing search committees for the hiring of station managers and also for evaluating station managers.
Now, was it a ruse that Pat Scott put forth in terms of the CPB?
I think it was, and I think that many people, including communication lawyers and others, feel that was the case.
Because I remember at the time we weren't given any options. You know, it was either this or that, and then that's what it was, you know. And so and that's when the local boards went into a minor role, if we can say that. You're tuned to WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial. We are discussing WBAI in Pacifica. This is the third in a series of community listener forums being held by WBAI. Our bylaws committee is meeting throughout the metropolitan area. I think the next one will be on Wednesday. Ray LaForest is in the house now, who is a member of the bylaws committee, and we also have Ralph Ingerman, who is the author, and you just heard him, author of Public Radio and Television in America, A Political History. Bob Goldberg, who's from the Long Island Friends. Carolyn Burden, a former member of the Elections Committee of Concerned Friends. Anthony McCall, a local board member and member of the CPR. Carolyn, you've heard Ralph speak. What are your impressions of what he just said?
Well, I have a few questions. Just a minor correction. I'm not really a former member of the Elections Committee. It still exists.
Oh, okay.
I still exist, but I'm also a member of the Committee for Coalition for Democratic Pacifica, mm-hmm. New York branch. Well, my feeling about the model is that it doesn't go far enough. I think that the problems Ralph describes probably can be ascribed to the fact that there was no accountability on the local board or the national. It was not elected. There was no one to turn to. That board in 1977, if I'm not mistaken, is the board that shut down the station. You know, the board was not representative of listeners. It wasn't answerable to anyone. And I think if the local boards were elected and the national boards, we might have a little more to say about the relationship. I think all the Ralph's model of a federal system brings out all of the problems in that system of the Electoral College, for one thing. There's just not a direct relationship. And I think that should be the first requirement, that members of the local board should be elected, members of the national. And I'm not too sure where I stand on this yet. I'm still thinking it through, whether the national members should be elected directly by the listeners or whether they should be elected by the local elected advisory boards. But they have to be responsible to somebody. Mm. And that's really the question I think we have to deal with in the next few weeks.
Anthony?
Yes. I, like Carolyn, am still closely trying to consider the relationship. I think there's a consensus among many listeners around the country that at the local level, there does need to be the authority to recall those representatives who are at the national level that for one reason or another stray sharply from the mission and become unresponsive, actually ignore, as did some of our recent board members, ignore the will of the people and reject the mission and mandate of the network.
Mm-hmm. Bob.
Well, first, I have to admit that I come late to the discussion. I haven't been involved in working on the bylaws or even keeping up with the discussion. So with that, anything that I say that might be foolish, please realize where it comes from. Okay, I think in any difference between what Ralph said and Carol said, I think the details are what are going to matter. The Electoral College, as an example of an undemocratic institution, it's true, but we don't seem to do much better on local elections either. When you have 30-some percent voting in national elections for the president, and perhaps less than 5% in school board elections out on Long Island where I live, if you don't have a degree of involvement of the constituency, you can run afoul of getting poor representation. So the details are very critical, just how the elections will be structured, how listener involvement will be increased. The growth of listener understanding is another thing, because WBAI is an education that tries to make up for what the mass media, the corporate media are doing in the opposite direction, as well as some failures in our basic public educational system. Most young Americans come out of high school and even college with very little political savvy, almost no political involvement, and so WBAI has a big job on its hands as one of the alternative independent sources of information and analysis that isn't out there in most of the media that most Americans have access to. At the risk of sounding naive, and because I haven't been involved with previous discussions, I jotted down a couple of notes, and I just like to go over them quickly. I mean, number one is, in terms of voting, is the constituency all listeners, all members, defined either as dues-paying or alternative volunteer services, has been suggested? Or is the constituency progressives and radicals in the listening areas? I think the mission has changed, as Ralph pointed out in his historical overview, and it will continue to change in the future. I mean, for one thing, new technology forces radio stations, television stations, to reconsider what they're doing, whether an expansion of that, for example, to the Internet, and how big a role those efforts should play. The possibility of splitting the bandwidth available into multi-channels is another thing that's right on the agenda. The conversion to digital would facilitate that, but it's a great expense for stations, particularly non-commercial stations, to face. So we're going to need to, in the future, consider all these effects technology is going to have on our communications among ourselves. Another thing, in terms of voting, and I mostly directed my napkins, notes in that direction. Are we committed to one person, one vote? Or, I've heard a lot of talk about geographic voting and voting by racial or gender or various other categories that would form voting blocks. So these are questions that are going to have to be, and they're very difficult.
One of the future programs will definitely be on affirmative action and those types of questions that have come up. And we've discussed the different proposals of membership in our last show. And it still, of course, is not a subtle question on exactly who our members are. I want to go to Ray. Ray, what do you think of the conversation? And I want to also poses to each person is, what do you feel the role of the LAB should be?
Yeah, well, good morning, everybody. That nasty thing called a job got in the way of me, you know, being here on time. I was traveling the subway, I missed the beginning. It's clear this is a very important show that has to have many sequels. One question that Carolyn brought up is the question of election, which is, to me, vital. However, I don't think it covers the common notion of electing people. That notion that we have of it doesn't cover all the implications. To me, for example, it's clear that if we look at the WBAI lab as it is constituted presently, it has many characteristics that are superior to KPFA, even maybe in some ways. So what I'm trying to say is that if you pay attention to representativity, you can fulfill many of the requirements of what a lab, effective lab should be, or effective body. And at the same time, if you have an election, formal election, you have no guarantee that those will be met. That being said, I don't think that, I think that when you're having an election, that you do have to pose it within the context of making sure that your actual constituency is represented properly. And that if you do so, the election itself can be worthless. But that being said, I cannot believe that you can have a process that is truly perceived and functions that democratically without having the election.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, here's the question. Go ahead, Carolyn. You want to say something before the question is posed formally?
Yeah, this question.
Hold on a minute. Go ahead.
This question actually still exists. One of the questions that comes up is what the function of the lab is. I think that was
the question you posed.
Yeah, and I think we really have to distinguish between an advisory function and a governance function. And sometimes those functions can overlap in the same body and people, and sometimes they cannot. I think if we have a lab that is truly elected and has a strong say in the governance of the station.
When you say governance, what do you mean?
Well, the ability to...
affect programming?
That's another question. Now, is there a programming council? One suggestion is that an advisory function, which is required by the CPB, the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, if we take their money,
right.
Number one,
which
is a whole other question, but we have been and probably will be, and if we continue to do that, then we, by law, must have an advisory board. The advisory board's function is to sound out the community and serve more or less as liaison between the community and the station. And that means finding out what they want, and that segues into programming. You can't really separate, I think, the programming function.
But what role then does the programming council have as a body within WBAI?
Well, we're running out of people to fill these bodies here. Perhaps we need one body, an advisory group that functions as to satisfy the CPB requirement, but is the program council in effect? That's one possibility, and I'm still thinking about that. And that would leave room for more community input. That the role of that body would be really to assess the community needs and see to it somehow or other that they are met in an advisory capacity. The real lab would be elected and would have governance functions and would take advice, presumably, from this advisory body as well as from other sources. So that is one model, but I think that it's not a good idea to confuse them. Whatever we talk about in terms of how to get people on to these bodies, whether it's the program council or an advisory council or the lab, the local station board or advisory board, whatever you want to call it, it's all a substitute for good outreach and making sure that we have an informed, educated, alert, involved electorate. Because if listeners don't know, they won't care. And if they don't care, they're not going to vote. And I think that really is our job. The longer we sit around talking about how to make up for uninvolved listeners, the more time we're wasting.
Well, how do you respond to the fact that even in general elections, 40% of the American population votes, and yet and still, I mean, we get, or we have some shenanigans, and we get people like George Bush legally. How can we ensure that the board remains representative of the varying communities in the New York City area?
Well, as I say, the major problem is making sure that the electorate, we have a very diverse population here, and if this electorate votes, we have no problems, because they will elect the people whom they want, and they are so diverse. And I keep going back to Sir Maury Marksman's funeral. Anybody who was at that cathedral and saw those, what, 3,000 people, can't doubt but that we have a very diverse board, I mean electorate, and those will produce a diverse board if in fact they have the facts and we can get people to run who in fact represent that. But I think the question of how to educate them and get them involved is one question. I think gerrymandering and appointing and not...
Do you believe in affirmative action?
I believe in affirmative action, and I think there are a lot of ways to make affirmative action. Well, as soon as, of course, as you talk about guaranteeing it, you're messing with one person, one vote, so you have a problem. And I think that our real problem ought to be in determining that the people who are candidates for these boards represent real people, not fake constituencies, and that they are diverse, and that they are advertised. People have to know who they are. That means airtime.
And that means each candidate getting on the air and putting out their program.
Absolutely. The station
is all to see.
That's right. The station is going to have to devote itself to that. And I raised point about the current lab is well taken. It is very diverse. My only argument is that it is not elected, and therefore it is not accountable. I'd be happy if that same board got elected right back in, as long as they're elected.
Mm. Anthony? Hold on a minute. I'm kind of slow today. It's Monday morning.
Give me some of my coffee.
Okay.
Thanks, Dredd. I believe that the lab has a critical role on several fronts at this time, especially learning from some of the mistakes of the past. We definitely play a role as the representative of the various constituent groups that comprise Pacifica at the national and certainly at our local BAI signal area level. Specifically, there are all kinds of groups, from the paid and unpaid staff, of which you know is an important component, people who actually do the work of on a day-to-day basis and over the long term of getting programs on air, the things that have drawn us. But there are several other, or I should say, as my wife says, and there are several others. There are those constituent groups whom, through our mission and through the actual work and struggle that Pacifica and WBAI represent, have become to be those people and those concerns that are most close to many of us. Communities of color that have been oppressed, constituent groups such as the disabled, lesbian and gay communities, youth, people who are not represented frequently through the established media and in general in government, those voices that have not been heard are those that we focus on mostly. And so as a, by definition, the lab needs to make sure that it represents those groups, not just generally, but many of us are beginning to think closely about this and feel specifically that constituent groups that begin to, not as organizational entities, but as communities of interest that are not incompatible, but comprise a mosaic of interests that fall under the Pacifica umbrella, are represented. So that's one of the critical areas. I hope to come back to some others. I'll just mention briefly that outreach is, of course, a critical component. Everything from information sharing on the one hand to involving people in the process of elections, involving and facilitating the relationship between listeners and the station in programming, in fundraising. All of those kinds of things are important. And just summing up, let me just comment that Carolyn's point that without elections, that representation question seems to loom like a sword of Damocles over the head of the lab members that presently exist. Well, I disagree to some extent. I think that the lab was what it was because that was how it was formed, and there's no automatic or inherent illegitimacy in a group that functioned for 50 years, oftentimes as a rather successful body and representative body. What's critical, whether we have elections or whether the lab, as it had been in the past, was selected, is that those people who are involved understand the mission and understand their responsibility to represent the various constituent groups. I think with elections, we have a much more likely opportunity that those representatives will be consistent, will not fall off the track.
Mm-hmm.
But still, we must be very conscientious about what they do and pay close attention.
I just wanted to ask Anthony, have you given any thought about some of the means to guarantee or to ensure that those groups that you're talking about are actually contacted and connected with?
Well,
one
of the things that was proposed, not by me, but by a number of people, not by me only, but supported by me, was a task force, a group of people that would come together from within our listener community representing all of these groups. For instance, I think at one of the recent bylaws meetings, maybe a few weeks ago, was proposed by one of the activists that we discuss the whole question of representation and see it not simply as listener subscribers, but perhaps as people who represent those groups. I think there are a number of possibilities. One way might certainly be to actually engage in an outreach effort between now and the point of elections, in which we more vigorously than we have to date conduct meetings in a variety of communities or attempt to involve in a much higher level in the discussion a variety of those constituent groups. For instance, youth, communities of color, the Latino community, the African community, Native populations, the Asian community are all communities that we think listen quite regularly. I have a lot of good practical experience that underscores that for the African ancestry community. But we don't necessarily see those communities represented in the activists who are out there and the ones at this point that would seem most likely to participate in voting. So if we can much more assertively involve ourselves in an organized, comprehensive effort to engage those communities, both on the air and through meetings that are based in their communities, in churches that have histories of involvement and activism, and in a number of other community forums, I think that we're likely to see the kind of involvement that will then confirm the credibility of any constituent oriented approach. Lastly, let me just note that one particular member of the activist community has suggested that if we involve people who have a history of struggle, people who have been supportive over the years of Pacifica, in fact, and also by the dint of their work, that they are not less likely, but more likely, in fact, to be able to be gauged as people who will represent our interests well over the long term as members of labs, as members of national boards. And at the same time, we should make sure that there's plenty of room for the new blood of people who are interested but have not yet been actively involved.
You know, I share the concerns that have been expressed here that the local board be truly representative of the communities we serve. And, you know, I think that the fact that we have elections, doesn't follow that it's automatic that that will be the case. I do feel that I think there's a general consensus. I haven't been involved with the nitty-gritty discussions on how this will work, but that elections, some form of elections for some or all members of the local board makes a lot of sense. But at the same time, I think we have to think about criteria, and not even just simply in terms of representativeness, but also the local boards, and the boards are there to support Pacifica's work and BAI's work in the broadest way, and that means bringing, you know, certain skills to the board. We need people who are lawyers. We need people who are accountants. We need a variety of people, people who are interested in and able to raise money. And I don't hear that being discussed. The other thing too is, while, you know, on paper elections are fine, the reality is that elections can be manipulated, and things, you know, in an election system, if it is not sort of planned correctly, things could be politicized in a way that would meet, you know, all of Lewis Hill's original concerns about the dangers of direct community control. And I must say, and that in the course of this struggle and talking to people who have, you know, wanted a greater representation, which I support. Some of them have couched this in terms that they want what it seemed to me a kind of desire on the part of some listeners to not only govern or manage but micromanage Pacifica, you know, or BAI's affairs. And you know, we're talking about, sure, it's fine in principle, have some of the candidates get on the air, but maybe in the worst case scenario that could mean alliances with different people, different staff members, pushing, you know, an agenda. You know, I've heard, you know, some of the listeners talking about, we want to, I don't like this staff member, I don't like that staff member. Even some of the listeners, you know, have had, I don't mean to paint a broad brush here, have been hostile to many people within the staff, a kind of polarization that I think is potentially unhealthy. So that, yes, we should have elections, but we have to, you know, think very carefully about how we're going to do it and what the criteria really is. And we have to somehow protect this, you know, very important, you know, institution. And we have to look. I know that KPFA, which has had elections, have been, you know, serious, you know, problems with the local board. We need to look at those in a dispassionate way and come up with the best formula. But I think, while I agree, you know, with Carolyn's basic premise about the desire for greater accountability, I think that, again, that the notion of listener or community control of Pacifica would be, could place, let's say, certain listener groups at odds with the staff, and keeping in mind that staff control and of its own affairs and matters was a very important principle as well. And we have to strike a balance. And that goes, you know, this whole delicate issue of programming as well. You know, it's interesting. It seems to me the most delicate issue, the issue that we often refrain from talking about, is programming. After all, these radio stations exist precisely for programming. And one of the things we need to do, you know, and I think this is being addressed, by some, is to find mechanisms to talk broadly about programming and programming direction in a constructive way. But I think that if some local board members run campaigns to become elected on an agenda of offing this producer or bringing in that one, we're in trouble.
Well, I think the whole issue of programming and how I almost think that it's almost a no-no in a way. You know, that there are mechanisms like the program council, and there will be a program advisory type of organization also. But another thing that I'm also concerned about is the role of the staff, because many people have denigrated, they've said some things as though the staff does not count, that we do not care about the station. Here I am making $35,000 a year working in New York City, living in New York City, and you know, it's very hard to survive under those kind of wages, but it's not the reason why I'm here at WBAI. So a lot of the folks think that the staff is just there for their own self-aggrandizement, or that we don't really care. How do you feel about the staff?
Yeah, I'd like to respond to that. I think Ralph's point is one that is made often, but I think without too much foundation. I think that the prescription, Ralph, that you give for the non-elected representatives of groups is the same prescription that got us where we are today. That's why we're in trouble. I think we need to really deal with an election that cannot be manipulated, and I think if we talk about, well, I know you want to do this at another time, but proportional choice rather than the standard model of the winner-take-all election, which gave us our president-select, I think we need to talk about that. But I think that listeners don't want to micromanage. I think what listeners want is some assurance that their needs are taken care of, that one person, a program director, a general manager, an influential person at the station, cannot dominate all those decisions, that there is a process. KPFA actually went through two elections, and they...
So does that mean that every program, I mean, the program, we have a program director. What would be the role of the program director if what you're saying comes to pass? I mean, what role would the program director play?
Well, I think that the staff should get together and help write the bylaws that determine that, because that's really what it's about. If the staff can write a description of a program council that they can live with, then I think the listeners should respect that. I think that the program director and the staff should have some say at programming. I think listeners should have some say. If there are listeners on, for instance, an advisory board, I don't think staff sitting on an advisory board, for instance, should have veto power over decisions that a program council or a program director have made, but there should be some way to factor in listener input about programming. There should be a process where new programs can be introduced and considered carefully and aired and discussed, rather than somebody coming in and saying, well, you're going to be off the air this week, or next week, you know, we want to institute this change and we haven't asked anybody, but we think it's for the best. I think that's really very dangerous. I think if we had a system of accountable people, whether you call them advisors or program councils or whatever, and a system for vetting new programs, then you might really have some listener input without frightening the staff. But I think the staff should really get engaged in helping write up the things that will protect them, but also do what we should do.
So let me ask you.
Well, Ralph has raised the issue that some staff are afraid of listeners micromanaging.
No, I didn't. I didn't say that at all. I expressed my own, just really reporting back, you know, the sense that I got in speaking to some. This is not to say that this is the case of all, but you know, you just have to be careful that you don't, you know, in trying to solve a problem, create a whole new host of problems by, you know, politicizing, you know, programming but let me ask you, you made reference to vetting programs. Now, whom do you think would be the people that would should vet programs?
Well, there have been several proposals, and again, I'm still thinking this through. I know KPFA has a proposal, a written proposal form for new programs. It goes to the program council, and I'm not sure how that's set up, if that's elected from within, or it has a few listeners on it, or a few lab members, that would give everybody a say. And it would be considered, and opinions would be taken into account. I don't know where the final authority would lie, but it would seem to me that a program director might want to think twice if his entire program council did or did not want to do something that he wanted to veto. I think that
Point just on programming, and I think that in this discussion we shouldn't forget the fact that while we are, you know, a group of local stations, that we are a national organization. I think that we should set up mechanisms that really you know, permit this kind of discussion and dialogue nationally on programming and programming direction and programming you know, approaches and how to better fulfill our mission and reach various constituencies. And so that is why it seems to me we need a structure in which there is local input and national input. I think that we in the blue paper on Pacifica's crisis, you know, that I wrote with Mimi Rosenberg and Karen Frillman and Pepsi Charles, we talked about the desirability of having ultimately building towards a kind of a summit and talking about programs. And it's a dialogue and discourse that needs to happen. It needs to involve, you know, various communities, various constituencies, leaders. We have to look outside ourselves. And it can't be primarily or exclusively local. And we can't just create, you know, a situation in which there are sort of political battles around specific programming on the local level. It could be very debilitating.
I have a question for all of you. Sting, I agree with you that this, as we write the bylaws, that we should take into account not only the local situation, but also try to have a uniform policy that applies toward the whole system, Pacifica system. But on a local level, recently the lab has been allowed to have two representatives on the program committee, I mean, program council, I'm sorry. And I personally have favored allowing one member of the listening public at this point. Do you feel that this is the proper direction towards a more participative, more effective program council?
I'm sorry I can't answer your question directly. I have to go back and say I'm concerned. First of all, let me look in broader terms. There's a lot of different arrangements that I could accept and still be a listener member of WBAI. You know, there's, if we look at a spectrum from right to left, none of us is at the extreme left. There's a cluster of positions that we accept, and today we agree with each other, and tomorrow we'll disagree. So there's a range. But for me, I see I have great concern over democracy. Okay, in quotation marks, because as I said, the details are very critical.
The devil is in the details.
Right, and as Ralph said, I don't want to see a total power struggle between either groups or between individuals over a program. It seems to me that the thing that should unite us at the very top is the word radical. We are against much of what we see in contemporary world. And to me, I can see, I love to be in a mixed group. I love to see representative from various groups. But the overriding concern has to be radical, that this society needs changing.
You mean progressive?
Well, I think radical is even better, but yes, of course progressive. And of course, that goes in nonviolent, the peaceful mission of Pacifica. But if we lose sight of that, let me just say that on behalf of Mamiya Abu Jamal, we have a group on Long Island. We have approached black churches to show a film, just to show a film. Maybe many of you have seen the film about the Mamiya story. The churches are very conservative in our experience. So I would like, Anthony mentioned, you know, involvement of churches. But that concerns me as a secular person, because my experience with most churches is that they are very conservative. And I would be very troubled if WBAI became a place of great religiosity.
Well, I don't think we're talking about religiosity here. We're talking about churches as organizations. Carolyn, did you want to continue?
Well, yeah, I think Bob raises a good point. I think where we do outreach, of course, will determine who joins. Mm-hmm. And that is going to affect where we go and what people want. And there are people who are afraid of democracy. They are afraid of people, listeners, having a lot of say. I don't think that listeners should micromanage individual programs. But I do think listeners need to be factored in and have the final say on whether or not Pacifica and WBAI is fulfilling the mission.
Now, how would that work? Give me a scenario.
Well,
final say is a strong.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think we need to have nobody making decisions who's not accountable. I mean, those two words, accountability and transparency, I can't repeat them enough. People have to be elected. They have to be recallable. They have to be responsive, and we have to know who they are and what they think and what they want before we put them in place. And if we don't like them, we need to be able to take them out. I think that the whole question...
I think that there should be accountability, but we're already talking about election system and a purge system, it seems.
Well, I think...
Is there not room for, let's say, on a local board, diversity of opinion?
Of course there should be diversity of opinion, and if people decide that the station, the next election, people decide the station isn't going the way they want, then they can replace those people whose directions they don't approve of. That's what elections are all about. I think the model you're proposing of constituent groups that are given places without being accountable to the listeners themselves is a real danger. That's what got us where we are today, and I'm afraid of that.
You know, it's true that I think there definitely is a connection with the problem of accountability and the crisis. But keep in mind that Pacifica is an organization that has existed for a long time with many progressive and left and alternative institutions of God under. And, you know, I just wouldn't be too cavalier about dismissing everything that's happened before.
Yeah, but I would say, though, that we just came coming from, you know, out of a major crisis, you know, fought for our very survival. So clearly there was a structurally something wrong there. There was a an inability on our part, even when we started paying attention, to correct things, you know.
Absolutely. And one of the